But I'm sorry to do all of that and have that, you know, 3.5 minute long preamble there to bring us back into the show, because we do have a guest here. That's one of the things we like to do here on Free Talk Live at the Porcupine Freedom Festival, is we get people on here to talk about their projects. They're doing what they're doing to make the world freer in their lifetime, because that's the goal. We all want freedom in our lifetime. And one of the reasons Mark Edge isn't here is because he's out there gallivanting around the world trying to acquire freedom in his lifetime. And Tony Olson here is with the Freedom Haven Project. So tell me about this. Give me a brief overview. Exactly what is the Freedom Haven Project?
The Freedom Haven Project will be bringing the free market to the world's 25 million refugees. We're creating an anarcho-capitalist floating port city outside the jurisdiction of all existing governments.
Okay, so is it a seasteading project, essentially?
It's seasteading, except that most seasteading projects are more about fancy homes on the beach or off the beach, as opposed to actually going out beyond the jurisdiction of government.
Okay, so you're trying to, like, have a seastead effectively, but
yes,
in the middle of the Pacific Ocean,
exactly,
or the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
All right, so how is that going? I mean, what's it looking like? It seems like that's a monumental task, right?
It's a
huge project to have a floating city,
yes,
basically.
Yes, we plan, if we're continuing on the same course we're on right now, we should have it built by 2037. That's a long way out.
It is,
but it is a big project.
So how do you intend to keep from running afoul of the many mafias known as nation states?
Oh, yes.
Because they tend to like getting a cut of everything.
Oh, yes, they do. This is where it gets really, really tricky. We will have to, if you're not actually flying a flag of some nation, then you're considered a pirate vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And all the countries agree that they can basically seize your vessel.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't go out there without a flag.
Oh. Right.
So we will have to have a flag of convenience, but we're going to play the game. And those laws that those flags have means that there's some regulation on the crew, some regulations on the ship, but no regulations on the passengers. So basically, yes, the ship and we maintain a ship will actually have some kind of rules with it, like how we handle oil. We have to have certain controls and certain things we have to keep up with, regulations. But the passengers will have full economic freedom and social freedom.
I think I understand here. It's sort of like how the captain of a plane is a citizen of whatever country that is, but
yep,
that doesn't mean that you're a citizen of that country when you're on that plane.
Exactly.
And here, you would be an independent citizen or not a citizen of, let's say you denounce your American citizenship,
mm-hmm,
then you're the captain, the people working on this vessel, or however you would characterize them,
yep,
are still subject to whatever laws of the countries they're from.
Yep.
But you, as the passenger, would be free.
And actually, there are very few laws. Most laws, by default, do not apply outside the jurisdiction, outside the exclusive economic zone. Those laws that they pass, all the federal laws here, unless they specifically specify that it goes out on the ocean, it doesn't. It's just here,
okay,
for on land. So
how common is this? Because I know we heard a story, I want to say last year, of some Asian country, may have been Vietnam or South Korea.
Thailand.
They encountered one of these seasteads. The people, mm-hmm, happened to be ashore at the time.
Chad and Nadia.
But they raided it. And
yep,
I don't remember what all of the details were, but did they do that on just the justification of, oh, this is a pirate ship? Because that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't. It's insane. I'm not surprised nations do this, but it's insane to treat every unflagged vessel as a privateer, as a pirate, as a threat.
There are two things there. One is they didn't have a flag, and a second one is they were actually inside the jurisdiction. They're not outside the jurisdiction. They're about,
okay,
you know, 15, 20 miles offshore, which, and this is where it gets tricky, because they said, oh, we're in international waters, but the international law does not define international waters. So sometimes they say it's 12 nautical miles, sometimes they say it's 200 nautical miles. But because it's not defined, we should not ever use the term international waters, because if you're inside the exclusive economic zone, 200 nautical miles from shore, you're in their jurisdiction. One way or another, they can control everything that happens. They can take your,
sure,
ship. They can regulate you.
I can see that. It's sort of like how it doesn't matter what China claims as its territorial waters, or what the United... There's disagreement, and China's the example that comes to mind, and I don't know how...
It doesn't matter to the U.S. what China claims as its territorial waters, right. Or to China what the U.S. claims as its territorial waters,
well,
but
China
if someone claims 200 miles from their shore, you better believe that they're going to come stealing.
Well, yep. China claims significantly more territorial water than, like, anyone else is willing to recognize.
The seven line map or whatever.
Yeah, and that's why they come to mind where this is happening, because there is no international... They're saying that's not international water. That's Chinese water.
And that's specifically why Thailand is so sensitive on this subject and why they took their ship. Is because that was Thailand, and Thailand shares another border with the South China Sea where a lot of this contention is happening.
Okay. So I could see that. It seems like that would be a bad area then to
I
do
agree.
This seasteading. So yep. one might... The Atlantic Ocean might be safer, but I don't know. It's all very risky, and there's nothing that's guaranteed. There's nothing that's safe when you're trying to get away from the jurisdictions of the governments around the world. I love the seasteading possibility. My issue... It's not really an issue, but I don't have the pioneering spirit like that. I don't feel like that's for me. Like, Mark Edge is doing a bunch of different projects, and he describes basically a cubbyhole down there in the Honduras somewhere where people can live, and it's only $150 a month. Yeah, and it's like the size of the bathroom here in the motel room at Rogers Campground. And it's got about the same amenities, except half the good running water, and then you don't want to drink that water.
Which is frequently part of the pioneering spirit. That's
it
right.
Doesn't
pack
sound
your
very...
entire life into a covered wagon.
And
sounds
of course,
like fun.
Mark is always promoting these ideas, and a few nights ago, we just had a beautiful conversation with him where we got him to say, no, of course not. I wouldn't take my kid and go live in this little closet in the Honduras. That's crazy. It's like, yeah, thank you, Mark. You finally said what we've been saying for years, which is why we promote the Free State Project and moving to New Hampshire, where you can have these amenities like electricity, heat, water, internet, and other little things like that that he doesn't necessarily have down there in Honduras. But we're less free than he is, demonstrably less free, and that's always going to be the case. The seasteading idea, and Mark's little project on that. I say little project. I don't mean to, you know, talk down about it. But Mark's project in the Honduras, he's got two of them. They both require the agreement of the Honduran government to honor its agreement to allow them to have their ZEDE, their special economic zone that is distinct, and to not violate that agreement. And they're already trying to violate that agreement, obviously. Mark thinks they can win that in court, but...
And to be fair, we do need the United States' agreement to exist here, because they do like to kill things that they don't like. And they pretty much declared us as one of their enemies, even libertarians on the list of detestable figures. At least we know here that we are working toward not having those problems, that we are working towards secession, and that there's a real possible path forward with that. Whereas with Honduras, I mean, there's no telling how long the communists will be in charge of the national government.
Right, and all of that's in theory, right? That's the goal. But some people, like Mark wants liberty in his lifetime. Mm. And for Mark, for Mark, it's a very personal thing. He doesn't care about my liberty or your liberty. And to be fair, he cares about my liberty because he cares about me and I'm his friend. But in general, he doesn't care about everyone else's freedom. And that's where we diverge from him. That's where Ian and I diverge from him, because I want everyone to be free. Yes, it would be great if I could just pay the American government $5 million and they'll leave me alone for the rest of my life. That would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't do anything to help anyone else. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm motivated by a desire to help others. And that's why I like these sorts of projects being put forward and being propagated by people, because we can make each other free, the people who want freedom. And seasteading and this Honduras project, these special economic zones, seem like good ways of doing that. But Mark's projects require the government to keep its word. Mm-hmm. And
I wouldn't trust that as far as I could throw it.
No, I remember what happened to the Native Americans when they trusted the American government to keep its word. And I can't think of any scenario where they don't even obey the freaking Constitution. Why would they obey this other law?
Yep.
Well, and honestly, I do wonder the same thing about your project. So, like, whose flag is your ship going to be flying? Because you are kind of trusting that government to, you know, not suddenly change the deal on you. Right. I have altered the deal. Pray I do not alter it further. Right. Exactly. So, I mean, that's kind of the relationship you have with whoever's flag you're flying.
Yeah, that's actually one of the countries. The most common flag being used for flag inconvenience out there is the Panama flag. Mm-hmm. But we're actually probably considering the second most convenient one, which is the Liberian flag. Mm. Liberia is a terrible country to live in. It has a very low level of freedom, but they're constantly in civil war. They're constantly fighting by themselves.
Well, that's convenient.
Yeah, and so you never know who's going to charge whatever. And they've actually delegated their flag registry to a company in Virginia that handles all of that. Mm-hmm. And that flag registry does nothing more than just say, okay, you want to be a member? Here's all the information. Okay, you're registered now. And I pay them their fee. And they pay back like a quarter of it back to Liberia, keep the rest, and 10% of it goes to some humanitarian fund there. But basically, mm-hmm. long story short, Liberia isn't even involved. They just get free money.
Well, and Liberia, if I remember correctly, has basically been the United States' sort of pet project. So it's one of those, like, people will probably respect your space. Right. People will probably respect your space so that they don't get on the bad side of the U.S., mm-hmm. But there's not that much government to actually oppress you because it keeps ending up in civil war.
Exactly.
So I don't want to drag this too far out into the weeds, but I'm curious, and you seem like you may know the answer to this. What is the process for these other nations recognizing another flag as legitimately belonging to a nation state? Like, there's a flag flying right here, yep. and the LGBT flag. And I would imagine that flying that flag wouldn't do me any good as far as affording me protection from the Thailand government.
In the UK, there's the International Maritime Organization that actually keeps track of...
I should have known. There's a bureaucracy. Duh.
Oh, right. It's a bureaucracy. Of course, they have an organization.
They have a list of all the flags that they recognize. Now, there might be other flags that other countries recognize, and there might be flags on that registry that other countries say, well, I don't recognize it. So there's, you know... But you start with that. You want to work with them and help them recognize your country officially, which means going through all the ugly channels of getting the UN to recognize you and working with other countries saying they recognize us. It's going to be a long process, so we'll be the Liberian flag for a while until that happens.
Well, I hope that works out. It sounds like it actually could. I was heartbroken to hear about the I don't want to call it a failure, but what happened to the seasteading project that you mentioned. You mentioned their names, and I don't remember what they were, but that was tragic, right? It was just these people trying to live freely, not hurting anyone. There are seasteading projects here every year. We usually get them on some of the hexagonal-shaped ones that sort mm-hmm. of connect together. These are fantastic, very dreamy sort of projects. And what I mean by that is it takes big dreams to get into something like this. Like Ernie Hancock down here, who does the show Declare Your Independence, he dreams of a spaceship that we can use to set ourselves free. And I'm actually 100% with them on that note. I don't think that human beings will achieve a libertarian society until we're colonizing other planets, at which point we'll be so far we can take our libertarians to some colony, and we'll be so far from the government that they just won't be able to enforce their laws on us. But so I'm totally with them on that. But it sounds crazy when I say it to people, and they laugh and they go, "Ha ha, yeah, spaceships." But I mean, it's going to happen.
It's definitely going to happen. Yeah. It's just a question of how much it costs. I mean, I think land is the cheapest, oceans are more expensive. The moon would be even more expensive. The Mars would be even more expensive. But like that's why on ships you live in cabins instead of big spacious housing. But the cost of living on what we have planned here, we estimate that we can probably get that cost down for people willing to live like they do in the Navy, where you have like multiple bunks.
Yeah,
$5,000 a year per person. That's cheap.
I mean, yeah, it is, but that doesn't. It doesn't sound like the way that I would really want to live. But I don't have that pioneer
spirit. I'd be living
spirit.
At about the $30,000, $40,000 level, which is, you know, having multiple things and living the way I live right now, you know.
Okay, and that they do have those options available for people, presumably. If you can drop the money on it, you can have your own room, so to speak, on one of these
seasteads. Yeah, one of these, a full room in the new Liberty vessel that we're creating right now. If you're an investor... And you're paying a friend at $65,000 for 10 years of that room. And then you can either have that for yourself or you can rent it out to other people and then, you know, get your return on investment in 7 years.
So it's sort of a floating condo situation.
Very much. And what we're essentially doing is nothing more than providing land or place to build your libertarian society outside the jurisdiction of government. We're essentially putting land out there where there isn't land right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, in essence, it's kind of just real estate.
Yeah, that was one of the strangest things that China did when it built an artificial island for the exact purpose of making sure that more of this sea area, which, I mean, it's the only thing that we have left is space on the sea and under the sea as far as frontiers go, because every square inch of land is claimed by at least one government.
Yep.
But, you know, realistically, that's most of the space available on the planet.
Right.
The oceans are fairly deep, and in theory, if we develop a way to live down there, it probably wouldn't be very pleasant. But if we can put a colony on the moon, we can put a colony at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean.
Exactly.
I don't see any reason why we can't. I don't know that I would want to live down there, because and that's not even about the pioneering spirit, it's because I'm claustrophobic. And I think that would drive me insane very, very quickly. Like my father, he wanted to go into the military, and he wanted to work on a submarine, and I just can't understand the mentality of someone who wants to be in a submarine and that narrow confined space. But yeah, the bottom of the ocean, to say nothing of the surface of the ocean, where there's presumably plenty of sunlight and you could have some arable land on there. There's plenty of possibilities. The only thing, as you mentioned, really holding things back is the money. And and in the libertarian community around the world, there's plenty of people with the money to back up some of these
projects. And also the mindset that a lot of people, when you say talk about living on the ocean, they imagine water world and some raft out there, you know, fighting the waves in the storm. What we're talking about is for those few people that have actually been on those mega cruise ships, those modern ones, where you play pool and occasionally the pool ball veers just a little bit, and you're like, why does it do that? Why didn't it go straight? Oh yeah, I'm on a ship in the middle of the ocean. Or you have the wine test where you have a glass of wine on the table and it doesn't spill, it doesn't even shake, because that's how stable the ship is. You forget that you're on the water. They have swimming lessons for people on these cruise ships because swimming is optional.
Yeah, if I was going to get on a cruise ship, I would want to make sure I could swim.
I would too, but that's the whole point. Is you're so disconnected from the nature that it's you're already, they've already tamed that frontier. They just haven't opened our minds and seen the potential that frontier has for us.
I've seen some of the images that people have of these ships. I don't know if that would be the correct term for them or not, but yeah, the engineering that goes into them is phenomenal. It's not at all what you would expect from some of these things, like the hexagonal ones that I was talking about. They extend down into the sea. It's basically dropping an anchor for several dozens of feet, and it's solid steel, and it keeps the ship steady.
A spar, yeah, those are really cool.
Yeah, and these things, they work. The technology's there. You could test this at home using a bowling pin and something else to stab it down into the water.
Yep.
This technology's there. It's feasible. It's practical. The only thing we need, really, as you mentioned, is money and for people to have the right mindset. Because it's a big world, but there are countless possibilities out there. Like Ernie likes the spaceship idea. I think that's probably the most likely to actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
Or which by that I mean, I think it's any of these could happen. But I think the spaceship one, the future libertarian society.
It's most likely to get far enough away from the government so the government doesn't come after you and take away your freedom once you're out there.
Well, I think it's almost a certainty that something like that is going to happen at some point, that we're going to have some libertarian space colony. But libertarian seastead, that doesn't feel like it's a more natural progression.
Enough. It's not far enough away.
But it's possible, right? And I love these sorts of projects. So where can people go if they want to learn more about this? And how close are you to having one of these out there with people like on it, living there?
You can go to freedomhaven.org, freedomhaven.org. And we're taking this in four phases. The first phase was actually come up with the plan, all the details and so forth. The second phase right now is the exploratory campaign, where we're actually going out there to see, is this even economically viable? We know that if we had enough money, we could build it tomorrow. Is there enough interest? Is there enough people out there that actually would want this to happen? And that's where we're right now. That's where we're in phase two, and it's marketing phase. And then phase three, you actually get the designers, Samsung Heavy Industries, the actual people from the shipyards to actually do the professional designs down to each rivet. And then phase four is actually building the ship, and then we start the whole process. 2037 is when all four of those phases will be complete. Each phase is about 4 years.
Okay.
We're in the middle of phase two right now.
So this is a sort of subscription service where someone would have to pay like yearly or, you know, by the decade or whatever in order to maintain their space on here, which would necessitate in many ways some ability to earn money. And this is one of the criticisms I have with Mark. Mark thinks, well, you can just work online, right? And that's true for some people, but it's not necessarily true for everyone. Some people's jobs just don't do that. But yes, yeah, But being able to do that, if someone could do that, they have a job that supports that, it's going to require pretty solid internet access. And I don't want to focus too much on the internet addiction that people have, but it is important for a person to sustain themselves to have connectivity to the rest of the world. Or is this project only for people who are already wealthy and can subsist?
Oh, no. If you're already wealthy, you already have the MS World that Ian mentioned last time, which is one that $10 million per cabin. You have other wealthy cruise ship options. You can live in a cruise ship right now today, although you don't have freedom. You still can live out in the sea for $80,000 a year per person and up. But that's still too expensive for me. We're trying to keep this as cheap as possible.
Okay, very cool. So that's freedomhaven.org, you said?
Yep, freedomhaven.org.
Freedomhaven.org to learn more about this. Thank you so much for joining us here today, Tony. There is more coming up, more people to talk to here at the Porcupine Freedom Festival. It is Free Talk Live.